Gambling Outros. I'm Rob Brohees. Money Mainville. We're in the saddle here on a Sunday evening. If you're watching on YouTube, welcome in. Hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, all that jazz. If you're listening via the podcast, welcome into the Republic of Texas football podcast feed. We always enjoy you here. Lots to talk about today. We'll hit the NFL draft, we'll hit Texas Tech baseball, and the free-falling RPI after a four-game losing streak. The last time you heard us talk about Texas Tech baseball on a Sunday night, we were talking about hosting. What a big moron I was 7 days ago. We'll talk about that again. We'll talk about some Tech hoops. And I didn't tell you this before in the extensive pre-show meeting, Ryan, but I wore this West Virginia hat on purpose. So we'll talk about that as well.
Rebranding.
And two former stars at their spring game. You know what? Let's start there. West Virginia had their spring game over the weekend. Of course, Texas Tech semi-canceled theirs and had it indoors just to the media. There was some rain involved in Midland. Obviously, some construction involved at Jones Stadium. I do not blame Texas Tech for having to do that with the game. But West Virginia had Pat White and Pat McAfee back at their spring game. Celebrity draw. Surely you could find two Red Raiders that could elicit some response in the same way. You're probably not pulling Patrick Mahomes back in April until he retires. He's busy. But I don't know. Would Michael Crabtree come back and spend some time with the team? Zach Thomas was in town a couple of weeks ago during spring football. He spoke to the team. Would he stick around for a fan engagement, Rouse? But what they did announce is new uniforms. Now, we are months away from a rebrand with Texas Tech. That is 2 months away.
July 1st, probably, right?
July 1st. And I would assume there's some major announcements on July 1st. And in the near future after July 1st, you will probably get an announcement for new Texas Tech football uniforms. If not on July 1st, you will have new uniforms in every single sport next year. Track and field, football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf. It's going from Under Armour to Adidas. That's going to happen. But what West Virginia did is they went back to an era and redid their entire uniforms because their uniforms were kind of plain and stale. They went back to the uniforms people loved. So here I am on the Gambling Gauchos, April 28th, the year of our Lord, 2024, begging Texas Tech to honor the past on July 1st and create a uniform that looks like a great uniform from Texas Tech past. Is this me saying level the bevel? Not necessarily. I know there's a segment of the fan base that really matters to. I would say I would prefer it in football. Doesn't really matter for the rest of the sports to me. I like the novelty of a throwback uniform to have it once or twice a year. But what I want to happen is, even if it's the 3D double T, for the uniform to look like the best uniforms we've worn in the last 3 or 4 years, just take that uniform and put the modern double T on it. It's so easy. It is so easy. Stripes on the sleeves. Solid helmet. Pants. No thick stripe on the pants. It's so easy. Get it done. I'm begging you, Texas Tech, to just unveil the 90s uniform with the modern double T and call it good. There's no reason to get crazy. Absolutely no reason. Money, would you be okay with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a fan of leveling the bevel. I think it looks better personally, but there's no, like, I'm a young cat, so it doesn't really, there's no sentimental value there for me. It just, I think it looks better. But I think with what West Virginia did was really smart. Like, they incorporated the stripes, which I think was the biggest thing of kind of bringing it back to that era of Mountaineer football, but still having some of that modern font style, the coloring. I think that was a really, really good move from them in terms of kind of incorporating those two things. But yeah, I'm absolutely on board with, you know, any sort of uniform that kind of brings you back to, you know, 08 earlier. If we want to go even earlier, if we want to go to Spike. But I mean, I think your uniforms, you've had some hits over the last couple of years. I love the uniforms that they wore against Tarleton State this past year. I've loved a lot of the throwbacks. The Sammy Morris throwbacks were nice. But as you said, it doesn't have to be too complicated. Just kind of keep it simple. Keep some of those modern elements that you have. If you're sticking to them, stick with it. Stick with the logo that you use now, the branding that you use now, but incorporate some of those nostalgic elements and then make them fresh. Make them look better. Make them look higher tech like they will be now. But as you said, I don't think you have to overcomplicate it.
You can marry the past and the present. It can be done. Under Armour did it in all of your throwbacks in the last 5 years. And I really like what Texas Tech has done in their uniform department, having a red uniform, a black uniform, and a white uniform, and kind of mismatching them depending on the week. That's fine. I know if I really had my way, I would have a road uniform and a home uniform, and then maybe a special one or two every season. I don't know that we can do it every single week. But after what you were doing in the final year of Tommy Tuberville and the first three or four seasons of Cliff with the ombre uniforms and the never quit uniforms and all of those monstrosities, the Lone Star uniforms, to simplify it to what you've done the last several years has been a step. But get rid of the monster stripe on the side pant. Agree with Starter here. Widen the fonts on the front of the jersey to where it's not Senior Chang reading the crib note in Community. Trying to see what's on the front of the jersey. And I'll say this, just rip off Kansas' new uniform and make it look like Texas Tech.
Yeah, no chevron.
No chevron. Get rid of the shoulder stripe. Get rid of the double T colored panels behind the double T on each shoulder to where you can't see the double T. I mean, it's just there are three or four things to change, and the uniform looks way better. Way better. And again, We're going to see new uniforms. That's not something that's not going to happen. They're not going to release an Adidas uniform that looks exactly like the Under Armour uniforms. They're not going to have the guns up stripe exactly like they were. I just want them to nail it. And I think nailing it means marrying the past and the present. And that kind of rebrand can be really, really successful. And if that's, you know, like you said, if that's somewhere in the Mike Leach era with the stripe down the side into the pant, kind of the Denver Broncos-esque uniform, maybe that's something you go to. But it'll be interesting to see what happens on July 1st. I know it's coming, so I'm not, like, too antsy about it. I think it's going to happen. But if they come out with a uniform that's like Indiana and completely modern, like Adidas can do, or some of the Nebraska uniforms, or if it says, I don't know, if it says something weird if it's like Red Raiders stacked in really small font on the front or something weird. I don't know. There are opportunities for it to be bad, but I think come July 1st, you'll do what West Virginia's done and go back to the past with modern elements. And if the modern element is that Sammy Morris or the uniform you wore against Arkansas, that 90s style Zach Thomas throwback with the modern double T, so you don't have to spend $1 billion redoing the entire campus, which has been said, like they don't want to rebrand the campus, so they're not going to rebrand the athletic department, which I don't know. Doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but it just feels natural. It feels right. And then I just want to see more emphasis on the spring game. I know it doesn't matter per se, but to look around the country and see, you know, 70,000 at this spring game and a full crowd here and this and that. And then to just have duds in Lubbock for the spring game every year, it just seems, I don't know. It just seems, because I know this fan base is excited about football. And if you win 10 games this year, surely you can have some more off-season excitement next year. I just want to. I want a good product. I want an SEC level product here in Lubbock, and I don't always feel like you put that effort forward.
Yeah, it's tough because you had a couple of things out of your control that played a factor in that.
Sure. Certainly this year, for sure.
Yeah, stadium reconstruction. Then you had weather. Your two best offensive players aren't going to play in the game. Yep. And I mean, I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Like, I like the format that they did this year with, Team Barron, Team Taj. But certainly I think like what West Virginia did, pulling in some very notable alumni, is a smart move. I think it makes it a lot of fun. I also think kind of the red carpet entrance that they did with their players was pretty fun. I don't know if you saw the Neil Breezy t-shirt, but that was pretty great.
Yep.
But yeah, I think like it's a Mickey Mouse game. Like it really is.
Yes.
Doesn't count for anything. It is there solely for
entertainment
and practice reps. And even practice reps is a little bit of a stretch because you've still got months and months of football ahead of you. You still got fall camp. And so, you know, turn up that fan engagement meter. Again, a lot of factors that kind of prevented you from fully embracing that this year. But I do think that there's some opportunities in years to come to really lean into, you know, the entertainment aspect of this game, because Lubbock will show up for that. There's no doubt in my mind.
Did you see Ole Miss's spring game?
The 50-yard field?
50-yard field. And on third down, I think you had to go for a touchdown. Like, I think there was some rule that you only had four plays to score or something like that. So it was a novelty. I mean, you look at professional wrestling. It's all scripted. I'm not saying script the spring game, but it's all about entertainment. It's all about creating an atmosphere. You can create an atmosphere here and do some things in the off season that create excitement for the new season. And again, you're months away. You have time to do it. But I've always felt like the spring game was kind of a dud here. And maybe they're just focused on football and that's what they should be doing. Maybe I'm off base. All right. Speaking of football, the NFL draft over the weekend. Big Hen already in the comments. My two favorite gauchos. Thank you, Big Hen. Rabbit is an Arizona Cardinal. Welcome to the Red Sea, everyone. Yes, Rabbit goes to the Arizona Cardinals. This from SportsIllustrated.com. Numerous experts believe that the Cardinals had the top draft class. They get, obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr. in the first and some pass rushers early. And then you have Taylor Dimmerson, who, according to Chad Reuter, of NFL.com. He says, Taylor Dimmerson was my pick for the Cardinals in the fourth round of my seven-round mock draft because of his quickness as a slot defender and tackling ability. So there you go. And I think, you know, a lot of people were high on Taylor Dimmerson because of what he did post-career, this offseason. I think he had a really productive collegiate career. I think he had a really productive super senior season. I'm glad he came back. It probably helped. But what he did in the Senior Bowl, the NFL Combine, and the Big 12 Combine made him a fourth rounder, solidified him as a fourth rounder. And he had about the perfect offseason, just like Tyree Wilson did, not doing anything last year. Just kind of quietly making everyone get on his level in the offseason last year. In kind of the opposite way, Rabbit did everything correctly and worked out so much for everybody and showed his athleticism and made himself a fourth-round NFL draft pick. And, of course, that's 5 years of hard work. He had one offer at high school and was a running back or quarterback in high school and transitioned to safety and has done really, really well for himself. And he's going to be a great NFL player.
I'm excited about it. I was kind of watching, you know, end of round three to be ambitious.
Yeah.
But it kind of felt like round four was always going to be where he ended up and ends up going really early in round four. But as you mentioned, like what he did in Frisco, what he did at the Senior Bowl, what he did at the Combine, like I think all of that really solidified his value to NFL teams because, like, again, from the Texas Tech perspective, he was really, really valuable to this defense over the past, you know, two or three seasons. Like, I would say one of the most valuable defenders that you've had in your secondary over the last two to three seasons. But then he goes to the combine, shows that he's a freak athlete, fastest safety in the 40-yard dash. I think that kind of put him in a lot of people's radars because, I mean, his pass coverage was really, really good at Tech, but he also showcased some ability in the run game as well. And now you've kind of got, okay, well, he's got this speed to really make plays in the secondary, but also, you know, to come up to the line of scrimmage and to play that run defense. And so early round four, I mean, I know this is kind of where he was sitting on a lot of people's boards. I know there were some people that were pretty high on him. Some draft guys on Twitter that I saw quite a bit of this offseason who kind of watched his tape and started to really like him. But this felt like fair value. But I do think it'll be a pick that pays dividends. Like, this is a really good fourth round pick if you're an NFL team.
And, you know, Rabbit 10 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe is not an NFL player. But in today's NFL, where it's all spread out and he can play in dime, like if you're just in dime 10 years ago, you're on the field 20% of the time. 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Now you could be on the field 80% of the time as the slot corner because teams are running two, three, four wide receivers, especially in that division currently. With the 49ers and the Rams running ace personnel, and the 49ers run everything, they're probably a little less likely to be having you in dime, but really good. Really good spot for him. I know I'm a Cardinals realist when I talk about them a lot of times, that they're a poorly run franchise, but this is a good draft class. And if they can get a quarterback that can see over the offensive line and improve that offensive line enough, they can be good. They can be good. You also got Jaden Daniels to Cliff Kingsbury in Washington. That'll be an interesting thing to watch. Other kind of NFL draft pieces. What did you think of the most talked about draft pick on day one, Michael Penix to the Falcons?
Crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know if I and like the crazy thing is you remove the Cousins contract. It's not that terrible of a pick. But with how much they paid Kirk Cousins this offseason on a 4-year deal, it's an interesting pick, I guess I should say. Yeah. Like, he's an old quarterback. He's very, very experienced at the college level. So you kind of have a good feeling of what you're going to get. You're not kind of rolling the dice on a high upside guy. But yeah, to kind of have Kirk Cousins on the books for 4 years and then to draft a quarterback at 8 is pretty wild. Got to say, I love the Chiefs picking up Xavier Worthy. I know that's going to be, you know, maybe a hot take around here, but I think that's a really, really good piece to put next to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, and then that Worthy pick, Xavier Worthy. He's fast. He's fast, but he got to Texas at 160 pounds and left Texas at 165 pounds. That's odd. It's rare that you don't see a guy go and flourish at an athletic department, especially like Texas, who you're probably downgrading quite a bit. Somebody was saying the other day, that it's a downgrade from Texas to the Chiefs. Somebody was saying, you know, he can get in the NFL, and now that he's with an NFL strength and conditioning department and nutrition department, it'll be better. No. The strength and conditioning and nutrition programs at a place like Texas are way better than anything in the NFL. In the NFL, he's a professional athlete that's going to have to do it himself. And if you look back to the end of the season reviews, the Chiefs programs suck. They suck. And you saw a picture of him in the locker room.
So funny.
It's a high school level locker room with the Chiefs. It's bigger, but it's the old wooden lockers. We had metal lockers the same size, just like those in high school. And I had 32 guys on my football team. And I graduated with 35. That's how small of a high school I went to. And we had just the same lockers, except metal, in our locker rooms. There's nothing fancy about the Chiefs locker room. They gave the owner of the 2-time Super Bowl champion Chiefs in a row, 3-time in the last 5-6 years, an F because he promised him a better locker room and then walked it back and was like, nah, probably not. So the thought that Xavier Worthy is going to get ripped and big and bulky and keep his speed with the Chiefs is kind of a fallacy. He's going to be 165 pounds maybe for this entire career. Now, he's either going to be Kadarius Toney and flame out, or he's going to be DeSean Jackson. I think it's one of the two. There are wide receivers who have had long, successful careers at Xavier Worthy's size. It's not crazy to say that. And when Rashee Rice plays this year, if he does, him and Travis Kelce underneath and Xavier Worthy and downtown Hollywood Brown going deep are going to create offensive mismatches if they're on the field. Seeing Scarlett in the house, they say, hi, friends, who's playing running back for the Cowboys? Wondering if I need to start warming up the old hammies. At the end of the draft, they got let's see. They got a free agent, undrafted free agent from Stanford, who is really fast. But Steven Jones said they were signing a veteran.
It's going to be Zeke,
and we all know who the veteran is. if Zeke Elliott is the starting running back for the Dallas Cowboys in 2024, week one, I don't know. I love the Cooper Beebe pick. And I love that trading back in the first ended in Guyton and Beebe. I would have liked Barton at 24, but I think Guyton and Beebe provide two immediate starters. The rest of the draft, I saw one Cowboys pundit say that the Notre Dame linebacker reminded him of Sean Lee. Okay, we'll see. Hopefully he's more put together than Sean Lee, hamstrings and neck-wise. But I don't know. I'm so out on the Cowboys as an organization right now. I can't like their draft very much. I do love Cooper Beebe, though.
I like his versatility on the inside.
Yeah.
Like he can probably compete for a starting spot at either guard position and then hopefully eventually center.
He's a day one center. He has to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Hall of Fame right guard right now in Zach Martin. And you've got all pro level left guard who they drafted a left tackle to leave him at guard, Tyler Smith. You have to play him at center if you're going to play him. Now, he was trained by a Duke Merriweather, the offensive O-line masterminds guy this offseason. And I think Will McClay just asked that Merriweather guy who he should draft because it seems like even going back to like Terrence Steele, he went to the O-line Masterminds camp and the Cowboys took him, and he's been successful as a run blocker at right tackle. But it's interesting. We'll see. And I think you still need some wide receivers in Dallas. I think you need, because Jalen Tolbert right now, they could be your two in some sets, your three. CeeDee Lamb, obviously, coming up contract-wise. They've waited and waited and let A.J. Brown and two or three other receivers get signed before signing CeeDee. You could have done it last year for one amount, and now you've let two or three other guys get signed, so you're going to have to go bigger than that. They're just so slow. Anyways.
Yeah, St. Brown and Brown have kind of reset the market. Like, you're looking at a much bigger price tag now.
Yeah, that's who it was for the Lions. Six Rod also says, I don't know if Worthy can catch any better than Tony with those baby hands, but to be honest, one thing, he won't be underthrown like he was five times a game at Texas. Certainly, and Worthy did have his drop problems at Texas. But I think for the Chiefs roster and where the draft was kind of stacked, I don't mind a wide receiver pick there in the first because they knew they could have some tackles later in the draft. And I like what they did. I like what the Chiefs did. All right, the rest of the Red Raiders on NFL rosters now, we'll go through them. Austin McNamara to the Bengals. I assumed he would be an undrafted free agent just position-wise. Good for him.
He'll make that roster, though.
Yeah, I think so. And then Baylor Cup to the Chiefs. They drafted a tight end from TCU. Wade Wiley. Is that Deadpool? Wiley is his last name. But Baylor Cup also going to the Chiefs. Hey, he's 6'6", 260, former five-star. Was not incredibly utilized at Texas Tech, but when he was, I thought he was really good. He could be an absolute steal of an undrafted free agent for the Chiefs.
It's got to stay healthy.
Got to stay healthy. Xavier White to the Colts. He's an interesting guy. If he can stick as a special teams guy early in his career, Xavier White, you could look back in 5, 6, 7, 8 years as a guy who's been in the NFL. as a special teamer, as a returner, or a guy going down and getting some tackles, rushing the punts and kicks. He could be that guy. Rayshard Williams to Vegas. Cole Spencer to the Titans.
They loved him.
They did.
Saw a ton of stuff coming out pre-draft about their ties with him. I'm almost surprised they didn't draft him. But
he ran a 4.89 40. That's a big man moving down the line.
It's wild.
That's faster than Spencer Rattler. Tyler Owens to Washington Commanders. He's another guy who, if he buys in to being a special teams guy, he can make a difference on an NFL roster and be there. And you look back in 10 years, and he's just been on special teams for 10 years and made a roster for 10 years because he's athletic enough to get down the field and be there. Like Matthew Slater from the Patriots, who could be a Patriots Hall of Famer, and all he did was play special teams his whole career. Was there anyone not signed or – oh, and then Miles Cole was drafted to the Jaguars.
Yep, that's what I was going to bring up. That's a really good late-round pick, in my opinion. Not super productive in college. I think that's fair to say.
Yes.
But the intangibles, like the physical attributes, his speed, his arm length, like that feels like a really, really good – flyer to take almost. I think ESPN had them in like the top 150 of their overall prospects. So to grab him in the seventh round on essentially a throwaway pick is great value in my mind.
Miles Cole's measurables are elite. He is an elite NFL body, and that got him drafted. And I thought he played out of position. Obviously, I don't know more than Tim DeRuiter. I don't. Tim DeRuiter has been really good, and his defenses have been really good for that position, especially. But I thought he was better the year before inside. And if he comes to the NFL and gains 20 or 30 pounds and is a Chris Jones-esque interior defensive lineman, I'm not saying he's, you know, all pro Chris Jones level immediately, but with that reach and what he can do and his height, the wingspan, maybe he is. Maybe he can get in inside and be a disruptor. He certainly didn't do it from the edge at Texas Tech consistently.
Always want to draft an athlete at that spot, if I was an NFL GM.
In the sixth and seventh round, especially. Especially. All right. It is impossible to grade NFL drafts the year they happen. It's really hard to grade drafts 2 or 3 years down the road. But if you go 7 years down the road, you can absolutely see and grade drafts. Patrick Mahomes was drafted 7 years ago, Friday or Saturday, 7 years ago exactly. Number 10 overall. I went and found some draft grades from 2017, and I was just looking at Patrick Mahomes's, but then I found this guy's draft grades from the entire first round of 2017, and I just want to read through some of them. They're really funny. This is Steven Ruiz from For the Win, USAtoday.com. All right, you ready? Miles Garrett, A+. Good grade. Good grade. Trubisky, D-. Good grade. Solomon Thomas, Stanford defensive end to San Francisco, A-. John Lynch nailed his first pick. Not so much. Leonard Fournette. B to the Jaguars, probably correct. Certainly later in his career, he was good. Corey Davis, C+. Hey, we're on a roll here in the top 10. Jamal Adams, A. Probably not. Mike Williams, B+ to Los Angeles Chargers. I think probably he's a little better than a B+, but I'm not mad at that. Here's where it gets a little crazy. Christian McCaffrey. You want to guess a grade on Christian McCaffrey?
It's probably like a C-.
D+.
Oof.
He likened him to Darren Sproles and said Dalvin Cook would be a better NFL running back. And then you have John Ross, C-, Patrick Mahomes, C-. Calling Mahomes a project is a major understatement. He's nowhere near ready to play in the NFL, and honestly, he may never be. Between his inconsistent accuracy due to poor mechanics and his tendency to bail from clean pockets and his lack of field vision, he's going to leave as many big plays on the field as he creates. This was a risky pick. In all honesty, all of that was true. Well, the last half is true and is still true. Bails from clean pockets. He probably leaves as many big plays on the field as he creates. But he's also kind of a checkdown king now and has field vision and connects on big plays just as often. So hilarious. Obviously, 3 Super Bowls in 7 years, and he didn't even start his first year. That's 6 years, 3 Super Bowls. Probably an A+ now, C- then. I'm going to skip through the rest of them. Deshaun Watson, C+. Obviously, he didn't know about the masseusing. Malik Hooker, A. Had a good career with the Colts. Marlon Humphrey, B. Jonathan Allen, A+. Long-time Washington Commander. I don't know that he's an A+, but certainly a long-time guy. O.J. Howard, A, with the Bucks. Charles Harris. Do you remember Charles Harris?
No idea who that is.
Me neither, but he was an A, drafted. Evan Ingram, C. Jabril Peppers, A- for the Browns.
I will never understand the hype around him.
Me neither. Tackris McKinley, a B. He did not last long with the Falcons. Taco Charlton, A-. Dallas will still need to add to its secondary, but they couldn't pass on an edge rusher as talented as Charlton. This is both great value and fills a need. The Michigan product has speed, power, and length to develop into a Pro Bowl defensive end.
Did any Cowboys fans feel that way when that pick was made?
No! That was a terrible pick.
No chance.
Two picks later, TJ Watt, B. The Steelers are just going to keep drafting these first-round edge rushers until they find a good one. Watt isn't the most explosive athlete, but all he did was produce at Wisconsin. Pittsburgh has gone after workout warriors in the past, so maybe this will change and a rusher they've been searching for. It did. It worked. Reuben Foster. Do you remember Reuben Foster?
Sounds familiar. Alabama?
Alabama linebacker, went to the 49ers in the draft, lasted 2 seasons. I think maybe there were some threats of arson and some things that happened. He didn't last there. He went to the Redskins or the Commanders, and then I think he's in the UFL now. A+, the best draft pick of the first round in 2017, Reuben Foster, according to this guy. And then Ryan Ramczyk, the Saints left tackle. Been there for a long time. Was a B-. So that's what happens when you grade immediately. I probably could go back and look at a bunch of my draft grades from KKM.com and what I thought would happen or did happen and find a bunch of the same stuff. But it's hard to grade these drafts immediately. But I like Rabbit's fit. I like Miles Cole getting drafted. I think that's a good thing. And then, you know, you have Cole Spencer. Terrence Steele was an undrafted free agent in 2020 and was a starter on that offensive line after a couple of injuries. And really hasn't given up the starting role since. So anything can happen.
I'm really glad I don't write draft anymore. I never did for football, which feels a lot harder. But when I was covering the Mavs with Mavs Moneyball, I think I did one draft with them. And I remember having an absolute aneurysm whenever they didn't pick Desmond Bane, which I, at the time, I thought Josh Green was going to be a complete bum. And he's ended up being all right. But man, I still wish they had Desmond Bane.
The NBA draft, you only get two picks generally. Maybe if you have multiple picks in the first and second rounds, you get more than that. But yeah, you have to put a lot into it. If you get seven picks, you can write a sentence about all of them. But if you're draft grading two picks, you really got to put a couple of paragraphs in there, and that's a lot more. That's a lot more you can say to be wrong in an NBA draft piece.
I bet I can find some of my old thoughts on Josh Green. Might try to pull those up.
I will say the one time on the NFL draft, I was like really proud of the article I wrote beforehand was the Mahomes piece I wrote about where he fit best. And I nailed the Chiefs because of Andy Reid. I just thought it would be a really good fit. And I thought he could be Donovan McNabb, but better because of the modern NFL game. I feel like I was pretty right on that, but the rest of them, I don't remember anything else that I ever said that was that right. And I did it for, I don't know, 8 years. So, okay. So we talked about the NFL draft. This is why I can't remember. The Texas Tech baseball team. The Kansas rotation has been good the whole Big 12. And we talked about that on Wednesday with Tech Hoops Guy, that they were a top rotation. You scored 8 runs this weekend. Not in a game. Not on Saturday. Period. In 3 games. And last week I tweeted, we should cancel these midweeks. And Don Williams read my tweet and asked Tim Tadlock, will you cancel games? He said, no, all that matters is playing good baseball, and that takes care of itself. Well, you did not play good baseball against New Mexico. You did not play good baseball against Kansas. First of all, before we get too far into it, thoughts and prayers to Dylan Maxey, who was hit in the head. But joined the team on Sunday in the dugout. Texas Tech is now 12-12 in Big 12 play, 29-17 overall, and have gone from being in front of TCU, West Virginia, and Kansas State in the RPI and UCF. They were ahead of all 4 of those teams last week. They have now dropped 12 spots to 40 and are behind TCU, West Virginia, UCF, and Kansas State. And at the top of the RPI, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State were still on the schedule the last 2 series of Big 12 play. But you go from holding all the cards and being in a position to compete for a top 2-3 spot in the Big 12 to winning 6 out of 8, 9 Big 12 games left. And being the 16 seed, or at least kind of being in a great position as a 17, 18, 19, not going to a premier spot, kind of getting a great 2 seed somewhere, to being back on the 3 seed line and struggling to be the 6th or 7th team out of the Big 12, being in the NCAA tournament. And it happened in 4 straight losses. It's not like it took 2 weekends to do this or a week and a half. You completely changed your playoff outlook, your postseason outlook in 1 weekend. In 4 games. Starter says Tadlock is washed. We had this conversation in the Discord. If you want to join the Discord and talk more candidly, you can at patreon.com/gamblinggauchos. How did Cash get so bad this year? He's the same hitter. He just connected with 26 home runs last year. I mean, Cash first of all, Cash didn't bat leadoff last year, so he had a lot more opportunity to hit singles for RBI. You know what? I would have to really go back and look at Cash's stats last year compared to this year. But you look a whole lot better when you hit 20 home runs than if you hit eight. But I don't remember Cash being some big doubles fiend last year. He had a bunch of singles and then a bunch of home runs. And nobody's pitching to him this year, especially as a leadoff guy with, for a stretch of the season, somebody not incredibly dangerous behind him. You don't have to pitch him good any at all. And then if you're batting behind Tracer Lopez as the eight or nine guy, and there's nobody on base when you come back up, you can just walk him or make him chase in the dirt. Bad weekend. Nightmare weekend for Texas Tech baseball. RPI again has dropped 12. They are the 40th team in the RPI compared to being as high as 25 before the weekend. So you've really dropped 15 spots since last weekend. Since last Sunday, you're 15 spots down. That's bad. That's bad. Now, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, two opportunities. But if your offense scores eight runs against Oklahoma State in a whole weekend, you're going to get swept again. And if you score eight runs in Stillwater, you're going to lose nine straight and not be in the postseason for the first time since 2015.
That's what happens when you play Texas A&M Corpus Christi and you lose. You'd rather play UConn and lose.
You would rather play UConn and lose, for sure. Little RPI there to talk for you. I don't know. There's talk about NIL. There's talk about production. There's talk about development in the Tadlock system. I can point out players where all of those things are wrong, but there's also obvious examples of, you know, players not developing and players leaving for NIL and players not being productive year to year or freshmen not being productive in being great recruiting grade guys. So I don't know the answers right now. I can certainly comment on them. Starter says, any big picture issues wrong with the program? It's shocking to see how fast Kansas can develop their pitchers and we can't. Look, Parker Hutera, the guy who loaded the bases with walks and gave up the single, had a 1.43 ERA and has been really good this year. Kyle Robinson has grown. Mac Hewer is a freshman who's been really good this year as a freshman. Now, I mean, the rotation and your top bullpen guys have been pretty good for a stretch. In fact, people keep talking about Gardner and the pitching. Your offense has let you down more than your defense. Well, more than your pitching. Your defense has been bad. The defense has been bad for several years now. The offense has not been productive this year in big spots. And twice, you've absolutely given away games by walking the bases loaded and then either hitting a guy and walk off hit by pitch or walk off single after you loaded the bases. So that's glaring for your bullpen, but I don't think overall the bullpen The top end of the bullpen has been bad. And the offense just hasn't been consistently scoring. But I think the pitching has been good enough to win in the Big 12. But you go and score like 5-6 runs in Orlando. You score 8 this weekend. You're going to have to score more runs to win Big 12 series. That's just how it works in college baseball. I'm not prepared to have overarching, huge ramification conversations right now about Tim Tadlock and Gardner and the coaching staff and the direction of the program. I'd like to get through this season and then have those huge, powerful conversations. In baseball, it doesn't make sense to have them after a sweep either way. Like, you can't have that conversation after you sweep Houston or West Virginia. By the way, you won 6 straight Big 12 games before you lost these 3. So if you look in the baseball world, you're 6-3 in the last 9 Big 12 games. That's called perspective money. In baseball, you have to look at weeks, months, not weekends. But on the same hand, that's a really bad weekend. But you can't talk big picture after you sweep somebody or after you get swept, because you lose the context. And in baseball, context is really important. And if you look in the context of Tim Tadlock, he is the best coach that Texas Tech has ever had in baseball. And that includes some pretty damn good coaches like Larry Hayes. You've gone further. You've been more consistent year to year. You've recruited well. Have there been some developmental issues in the last 3? Have there been some NIL issues in the last 3? Have there been some issues with wins and losses and competitiveness and juice and clutch in the last 3? Sure. But you got to a regional and were really competitive against Florida last year. You're one out away from taking Notre Dame to the limit the year before as a 3 seed. I don't know. It's all about context. And if you flame out and miss the tournament this season, that certainly adds to the context, but I don't think it overcomes the rest of the context. If you miss the tournament 3 years in a row, you certainly add more context. In that respect, but I would like to have that happen before you have that conversation, because if you have it now and then it doesn't happen, it's all for nothing, which I know a lot of what we do is all for nothing anyways, but let's just leave it to then. Right now, though, 40 RPI, you're back in the danger zone. And that's how thin the margin is. 7 days ago, you were out of the danger zone. This weekend, you are back in the danger zone. All right, let's talk a little Texas Tech basketball. I'll hand it over to you, Money. There was a visit over the weekend or 2, and one guy you really like.
Yeah, I believe there were 3, actually. I think you had Andrew Carr in town, who ended up committing to Kentucky about an hour ago, which is a bummer, so I really like his game. Then I believe you had Javon Buchanan, the NAIA player. I believe he was here Saturday and Friday, maybe Saturday and today. But then probably my favorite player that I've seen Texas Tech link to this offseason, Elijah Hawkins, the point guard out of Minnesota. When I first saw that Texas Tech had contacted him, I quote tweeted something in the work bathroom, and I said, I have no reason to believe that he would be interested in Texas Tech or vice versa, but it's hard to imagine a better fit next to Darion Williams, Kevin Overton, and a couple of other pieces. Ended up deleting that tweet. I didn't like the wording, which is terrible, because things have clearly trended in a favorable Texas Tech direction. Him having a visit this past weekend, obviously a very promising sign that Texas Tech is very much interested, and he is very interested as well. But just a true point guard. And I want to talk on this for a second because I think it's something that we've kind of drifted away from as a program over the last couple of years. So Hawkins has played three collegiate seasons, started at Howard, played 2 years there, and then played last season at Minnesota. Every single year he's played college basketball, he has had the best conference-only assist rate in the country. So three straight years in a row. That is very, very impressive. If we want to look at assist percentage, which is essentially just an estimate of kind of how many field goals a player assists while they are on the floor, he had a 38.8% assist rate this past year. The highest assist rate that a Texas Tech player has had since 2009 when playing over 1,000 minutes. And that's important because assist rate is kind of an estimate stat, which means it's based on minutes production. For example, Jack Francis had like the highest rebounding rate in the Big 12 this year, but we would not call him the best rebounder in the Big 12 because he only played about 3 minutes. If you look at assist rate since 2009 at Texas Tech among 1,000-minute players, John Roberson has the highest at 28.7. So we're talking about potentially a player with a 10% higher assist rate than anybody that's come through this program in over two decades, almost 2.5 decades. And so I had a tweet earlier essentially saying Hawkins would be the best true point guard, true playmaker to come through this program since John Roberson. That is not a stretch by any means in my mind. And Texas Tech has done really well with some score first guards over the year. They got a lot out of Mac McClung. They got a lot out of Kyler Edwards. They got a lot out of Davide Moretti. But a true point guard facilitator has become a very rare sight around this program. And Hawkins, not just a good assist guy, like obviously the assist numbers are impressive, but the assist to turnover numbers, especially this year, they were a little bit higher last year at Howard. But this year especially, really, really impressive. So if we take that 38% assist rate and we tack it along a turnover rate that's lower than 24%, only seven guys this year that played over 1,000 minutes had an assist rate that was over 38% and a turnover rate that was lower than 24. Two of them were a group of five guys. Xavier Johnson out of Southern Illinois, who was a really good player in the NBC. Isaiah Stevens at Colorado State. From Allen, Texas. He's a five-year player, been really, really good there. The others, Reese Beekman at Virginia, who was an all-ACC player this year, Jamal Shedd at Houston, Tyler Kolick at Marquette, Braden Smith at Purdue, and Elijah Hawkins. I mean, there are four other players on that list at P5 levels who were elite players. If you go back and you put those same numbers on the Big 12, and again, I want to preface this by saying, not saying Hawkins will do this exact production in the Big 12. There is a learning curve, but I still think he'll be damn good if he doesn't end up transferring to Tech. If you look at those same rates in the Big 12 since 2009, only four guys have done that. One of those is Shedd, obviously, this past season.
Right.
The others are Trey Young, okay, Marquise Noel, and Pierre Jackson. Those are four of the best point guards to play in this conference over the last two decades. And so, again, I'm not making a direct assumption of what his production will be. But his production this past year was historically good. And when you look at the pieces on this roster, you look at a guy like Darion Williams, who I think has some stuff in his bag to play on the ball. You look at a guy like Kevin Overton, who has been primarily an off-the-ball player at Drake. You look at Kerwin Walton, Chance McMillan, even Federico. Like, when you put Hawkins next to those guys, it's going to be hard to talk me off the cliff of him not getting better. Like, that is really how I feel. And so this is far and away, like, priority number one for me right now, if I'm Grant McCaslin. I'm thinking we have got to lock this guy down, because when you look at this roster, you look at the holes that they have, the biggest need is point guard, and you are not going to find a better true point guard in the portal than Elijah Hawkins. And so I think the movement on this is very promising, that you got him to Lubbock. You know, he posted out some pictures of him on his visit. But man, it's really hard for me not to get excited about what he does with the ball in his hands. And I think there's some fair conversations to be had about his scoring around the rim, his 3-point shooting. But again, if you tell him, hey, you come here, we'll put you next to these pieces, and you think your assist numbers won't get better playing next to an all Big 12 guy, playing next to one of the most elite catch and shoot guys in college basketball last season, one of the best, most efficient offensive players in Kevin Overton last year. I mean,
it's a great alley-oop guy in Federico,
an athletic freak with a great wingspan. Man, I mean, my expectations are really, really high, and I've been wrong before, but man, it's going to be really hard to kind of talk me off the cliff of this being a massive get in a player that I think will translate really, really well to the Big 12 level.
And when you say assist numbers get better, he had 7.5 a game last year. You're saying he could be a double-double guy with assists? You're getting 10 and 10 with him facilitating here in the Big 12?
Yeah, maybe not, but maybe the efficiency is better. I certainly think that's a fair assumption to make. I mean, per-game percentages are so hard to quantify in college, especially when we're talking about jumping a level. But it is hard to imagine him not being a better passer when you surround him with guys that you have on the roster right now.
Would you say if Hawkins commits, you have your starting five locked in? Maybe not locked in. You're still going after guys, but you would have a competitive starting five right now with Hawkins locked in?
I think so. I think I'm of the opinion that you could get a better big man. And I think part of that is because you have great Osabor still scheduled to visit here in a couple of weeks. And I think he's one of the best players in the transfer portal right now. But I think if you trot out that starting five, you will be competitive in the Big 12. But certainly you throw Osabor in there, and I believe he's at Kentucky right now. And I believe Kentucky even flew out his family from England to be in Lexington for the visit. Mark Pope's doing work, man. He's doing work.
Well, I was about to say, we talked about Carr. He went to Kentucky. He also was rumored to be around Texas Tech. Osabor down between seemingly Texas Tech and Kentucky, and Hawkins, Texas Tech and Kentucky. So you're recruiting against the big boys. If you could win one of those battles against Kentucky, I'd be pretty excited. If you get two, I'd be really excited and be the two left.
Two would be huge. It would be huge to get Osabor and Hawkins. I mean, absolutely huge. You would be, my understanding is you would be on some national media articles for portal winners. You've got to be.
Wow. Do you know what else would be huge money?
What's that?
The impact Barnett Howard and Williams can have on your life. If you're in trouble, if you've had some catastrophic injury, personal injury, family law issues, criminal defense, if you're in need, maybe a DWI or some juvenile crimes defense, Barnett Howard Williams can help out. They don't want to hear your call, but if you need them, you can call them. BHW Law Firm. They are based in Fort Worth, but do work across the state of Texas. Title IX issues. Title IX is changing. We've not talked about this on the pod, but it's going to be looking different here soon. If you are across the state of Texas and need a law firm that are honest, trustworthy, compassionate, sincere, caring, those are from clients. If you need a Texas Tech graduate, a double Texas Tech graduate to be your lawyer, you can call Barnett Howard and Williams, and they can help you out. BHWLawFirm.com. There's a couple of questions also in the mailbag, the Matador Transit mailbag, that I wanted to ask you because they seemingly fit into this episode so well. There's one about finishing Ferb that I'm not sure about. It was asked at 12:41 a.m. I'm not going to ask it. But there's a couple of basketball ones. First, how cringe was the Hunter Dickinson "I'm back" tweet?
It was bad. Like, I work in marketing, and thinking about like how to properly execute the return of like a high caliber player, like,
yeah,
he has a ton of publicity around him, has won a lot of awards in his career, to kind of do like a tweet in reply. And it was hilarious too, because when I saw that Bill Self tweet, I clicked on his profile, and his last tweet before that was the Kevin McCullough situation, where he essentially wrote a book about Kevin McCullough not playing in the NCAA tournament, which is, yeah, just kind of the cherry on top of that.
I hadn't tweeted since. Yeah, and was that planned? I mean, I'm sure
gotta be.
Sure, yeah, it was, but whose idea was it to have Bill Self say, "Hey, Hunter, you coming back? The people want to know." And then Hunter Dickinson saying, "Yeah, coach, I'm coming back." It's funny nowadays that we need that because of the transfer portal. You never know who's in or who's out. Even though Hunter Dickinson had already come from Michigan to Kansas, and I guess you're thinking of the NBA for him now, but it was interesting. It was interesting. Question for money. Going back to that tweet you had, yet I believe wholeheartedly Hawkins would be the best true point guard to come through this program since John Robertson. The question is, what exactly do you mean by true point guard in the context?
A guy that can facilitate the offense and make plays. So traditionally, you would think of true point guard, and this is an extreme example, but like Chris Paul. Like a guy who runs the pick and roll and creates out of it. Texas Tech has had a lot of score first point guards over the years. Think of your Mac McClung's, your Pop Isaacs, those kind of guys, not facilitators in a true sense. They can do some of it because you have to at point guard, but a true point guard, guys like Chris Paul, DeJuan Harris, those kind of molds where they create out of the pick and roll. High assist numbers, low turnover rates, low shot volume, really about running the offense.
Where would you peg, this is a follow-up, but I'm going to change the question because he's not here to ask it. That'll give you a thought on who it is. What would you call like a Keenan Evans? Because when I think of point guard at Texas Tech, I think of Keenan Evans. And obviously, late game situations, he would score first. But I don't feel like that was his game all the time. How would you peg Keenan Evans in the true point guard conversation?
Yeah, I would call him a combo guard. So a guy that kind of has a little bit of both attributes, like they can go and score when they need to, but can also facilitate the offense. But even then, like Keenan was, I would say, a better scorer than he was a facilitator. Yeah. And on paper, like even a guy like Culver was a better facilitator than a guy like Keenan. Although Culver obviously kind of playing that wing combo forward role. He was an odd guy. Yeah. One of a kind.
Point forward.
Yeah.
I just remember Keenan Evans getting to the rim whenever he wanted to. And he's like the last guy I remember in this offense who had a great consistent drive and dish. You haven't really had a drive-and dish guy consistently. There have been guys who do it some. What's that guy's name? who's the guy that dribbled so much last year? Not this last year, but the year before. Mark Adams' final year.
Davion Harmon?
Harmon. He would drive-and dish some, but his driving dish was go into the basket, turn around, dribble once, and then throw it back out. Anyways, let's see. There was another question. Oh, I deleted it. Do you see the offense changing with Dave Smart going to Pacific, or do you think they'll run the similar style?
It'll be interesting to see who the hire is. The next coach, like if you try and go offensive specialist and bring in a guy who's known for running a certain brand of offense. But I mean, really, like you look at the offense last year, specifically half court offense. Not a lot of that is irreplaceable in my mind. Might be a hot take, but like what you did really, really well last year was set plays on SOBs or BOBs. And a lot of that was Matt Brower, who's still on your bench. And you brought in two guys. This is something that I've been wanting to talk about, but I haven't had the chance. Like Kevin Overton, like 98th percentile after timeouts last year. Federico, like 85th percentile in BOBs last year. That doesn't feel like a mistake to me. So I feel like that is definitely going to continue to be a huge part of this program's offense. But I think your offense was really about your personnel last year. It really was. You got some out of Washington initiating your offense at the top of the key, and then a lot of Pop Isaacs volume shooting. I mean, that feels like you can game plan a little bit next year and you'll be fine. Dave Smart's a great coach. Not trying to undermine that, but I do think that, you know, the sky's not falling.
And it's almost like that potentially could have been the plan. Hey, Dave, come to the States for a year, prove your offense, come get your spark back, and then you can go get a D1 job because you've coached in this level of college basketball for a season.
Yeah, and teach me some things.
Teach us, yeah.
Like, I'm a young coach. Yeah. Show me some tricks. Even, like, the off-the-court stuff, too. Like, Dave Smart was doing, like, mental health stuff with hockey teams for a while.
Yeah.
Like, kind of the leadership aspect of things. Like, that is valuable to coaches.
The rest of these, I'm sure, will be answered on Wednesday. If you want to listen to the full mailbag, you can every Wednesday on patreon.com/gamblinggauchos. It'll be a little different this week because of some extenuating circumstances, but it will be out this week on Patreon. Shout out to LCU Baseball. They won their conference title with, I think, 5 straight wins to finish the year. They swept whoever they played this weekend. Proud of the alma mater. I've gotten the opportunity to call a few LCU baseball games in the last several years. They're always fun to do. There's a security guard that is close to the team, and he calls some games with you. I think he called more this year even. But even if he's like on duty, he'll stop in for an inning or two. He's a hilarious older guy. Big Yankees fan. But it's a special place over there. Obviously, longtime head coach and Coach Blackwood. Just a special baseball program there at LCU. Proud of them. Proud of what they accomplished. And hopefully they can make a run here in the postseason.
I was locked into that Grand Canyon Washington State game. I don't know if you and Tech Hoops guy talked about that on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
But I think Washington State actually ended up winning by 2.
So I didn't go back and watch the Grand Canyon game because he lost the game that happened during the stream last week. So I didn't go back and look. That was 2 weeks ago, a week and a half. Well, I saw it. This is way unrelated, but I saw a TikTok about Grand Canyon potentially like shutting down. Have you seen this?
Yep.
What's going on?
I don't know. They're apparently like a fraudulent university, for-profit university.
They're like not accredited. Like, I forgot to look this up.
I literally had no idea that they were a real school until Bryce Drew got there and they started kind of showing up at a higher level of college basketball. But I always thought it was like ITT Tech.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden they're just hooping.
So this is from December 28th of 2023. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, complaint charges Grand Canyon University with deceptive advertising and illegal telemarketing. According to a 5-count complaint filed against Grand Canyon Education, the FTC alleges that defendants misrepresented Grand Canyon University as a non-for-profit institution, made misleading claims about the cost and course requirements of its doctoral programs, and engaged in deceptive and abusive telemarketing practices in violation of the FTC Act of Telemarketing Sales Rules.
FTC is not messing around right now, man.
They fined them over $37 million already. The case is pending in an Arizona federal court. I missed this story completely. The FTC alleges that most students who enrolled in Grand Canyon University's doctoral programs were never awarded their intended degrees.
Oh, that has got to suck.
Wow. Wow. Well, maybe
can you imagine
just getting a fake degree? No, that would be brutal. Absolutely brutal. All right. We will be back with the mailbag at some point this week. Seeing Scarlet, they've invested a ton in athletics as of late out of nowhere. They have one of the up and coming women's basketball coaches too. It's wild. Well, and like, I know they have a campus, but I think it's like a small in-person campus. And then most of it's online. I think they have a huge online community.
Because that's how they started, I believe.
But can you get a doctorate online?
Surely, right?
I guess today you can. That seems like an in-person thing, getting a doctorate. That seems more, I don't know.
Depends on what it's in.
Sure. There's, you know, you can get a master's in leadership. Whatever that is. I'm sure you could be a doctor of leadership, too. All right. Anything else? What did we miss? We talked uniforms. We talked baseball. We talked hoops. We talked
draft.
NFL draft. I think we're good. I think we did it. I think we did it. Congratulations to us. All right. Love y'all.